Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 844th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Today's episode is a replay of our monthly garden chat. If you want to attend live, we do them the fourth Tuesday of each month. You can go to gardenchat.org and sign up and you'll get notifications for it. Today, my partner Heidi and I are chatting about our experience of going through Hurricane Helene and all that we learned from it. Enjoy. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Greg Peterson coming to you from Urban Farm U and Goodness Grows Organics in Asheville, North Carolina. And I am here with my beautiful, incredible life partner who I met, what we've been together now 11 and a half years, which is amazing to me, Heidi Lichty. And Heidi is, well, I'll let you tell everybody.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Greg. I am two rooms down from where he's at right now, and this is my yoga studio. So I've taught online since March of 2020, and yeah, I'm still teaching on live stream, and I have a website with a ton of classes, and I send out recordings and still loving it. I teach Monday through Friday, and I'm still on Arizona time with live stream classes. So a Phoenician to the core, been there 51 years before we moved here, and many of my students are still in Arizona. So my live stream classes are on in Arizona. So yeah, it's great to be here and great to catch up again. Greg just figured out it was a year ago that we did the chat.
Yeah. So I figured every October we'll do an update on how it's going on the farm.
Okay.
And we've had some excitement in the past month. Not necessarily fun excitement, but Hurricane Helene blasted through here. And how was your experience with that, Heidi?
It was intense. We were very fortunate and grateful, and also with planning, that we are away from waterways, but it was scary. It was scary. I've been in a tornado in Phoenix, actually.
I remember that.
Like 60th Street and Bell when I was a kid, and that was frightening. I was in third grade in the big flood of 1978, and we were cut off because we lived way in the west side, and we were cut off from everything from the bridge collapsing. So that's been my experience with mass weather events. And this was intense, like going to sleep that night, knowing the wind was coming through. We'd already gotten 9+ inches on the property of the pre-storm prior to Helene. So everything was super saturated. We knew we were going to get probably up to 70 mile per hour in our area. And we don't have a lot of big trees around us, but there's one hardwood cherry out in front of the bedroom, and it sounded like a train coming through. If you've ever been in a tornado, it was that kind of wind sound. I was up till probably 4 a.m. and just listening, and I fall asleep to the big sound and then I wake up wondering if the tree had landed on the house. The actual storm was a little frightening, not knowing what exactly would happen, if we'd lose structures or roof or all of that. And then, of course, the concern for all our neighbors and the places near the rivers, which we had good reason to be concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we were out of power for 7 days and lots of interesting challenges with that.
That was very much a hunting and gathering time. So we had no internet, no power, no water for 7 days. And it really became our job to find water. So there, we had two places close by that were Good Samaritan people that allowed us to come and actually take a shower at one point.
Yeah, that's great.
And collect drinking water and collect water to flush the toilets and, you know, that kind of stuff. So that helped a lot. And then cooking. And about 10, 11, 12 years ago, I actually bought a rocket stove. And a rocket stove is a little stove. It's about 8-10 inches in diameter and about a foot tall. And it burns little sticks. And it was still in its original box. I'd opened it to look inside, but I had never taken it out. So that's actually what we cooked on for the week.
that was where we cooked and have plenty of kindling around here. And so it really, it was a all consumptive process of feeding us and finding water. I jokingly, after the fact, said hunting and gathering for the week.
Yeah, and checking on everyone. And we have some elders around us that are local North Carolinians, and checking on them. One lives alone, and she just recently turned 80. So yeah, like going to homes and checking on folks and checking in with all our neighbors and just making sure of people's safety. And did they have what they needed? Did they have food? Did they have potable water? We had some stored that got us through to about Wednesday when we went to that our friend's house and showered. That was just amazing to have a hot shower, hot meal, and some community. And our neighbors have been amazing, though. Just that's one of the things, the takeaways, I think, of just in a resilience of your community that's going to count, that makes you resilient, is your connection to community. And so we can do a lot as individuals. We can do a lot to prepare ourselves and find our level of comfort with what that preparation means. But being not isolationist, being in community and connected and knowing people prior is really helpful. And then you really get to know people when you're in the midst of something like this. And I was really impressed. If anything, I feel very soothed by the people that we live near. And we shared power sources. We shared food. We cooked together. We bonfired together just to connect. And it was long, dark nights. That's a very interesting thing about living in our tech world, that, and I'm a night owl anyway, it was many hours just in the pitch black. And no, some people had podcasts they had downloaded or whatever. I luckily had an audiobook that I could listen to here and there. But it was just really interesting. Some of it, we played games at night, some lanterns, some long running, not propane, but long running battery lanterns we got years ago. Those are really helpful, I have to say. And it was this combination of scary and feeling really isolated, sometimes not even knowing when the tail end of the hurricane was over us, we couldn't get weather. Yeah, it was definitely quite the climate change experience and test run for, you know, what in some way I think most areas of the world are currently or will be dealing with.
Yeah. And some of our takeaways, we thought we were prepared. We had plenty of food backed up, but we thought we were prepared. And one of the things that I had purchased, again, about 10 years ago, was a generator. And so I pulled the generator out, and I'd never started it. I just figured when I'd need it, I'd go ahead and start it. And I pulled it out and filled it up with gas and oil and pulled the crank, and nothing happened. And then I realized, oh, there's an on-off switch. So I flipped the on-off switch on, and it crumbled in my hand. And basically that ended that one. So one of my takeaways from that is, if you're going to have something like that, we need to make sure that it's something that we know works.
Maintain it.
Yeah, maintain it, exactly.
Yeah, and pull it out and use it quarterly or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, and out of this came a list of things that we need to do differently for next time. And that next time starts right now. And so you created a list.
We've been sharing our prep lists with neighbors and friends that are kind of doing the same. Everyone's come out of this that's feeling like, oh, we didn't have this. Oh, we didn't have that. So certainly some of the things, I had a friend that sent us, it's a long hold charge radio that can act as like a ham radio and also a regular radio. I want to get a crank radio and a crank flashlight or something that we can have multiple methods of charging, solar and maybe one of the NOAA ones. So it like has the connection.
Well, they have a crank radio. The NOAA has a crank radio.
Yeah. So that was one of the things. Just, we did sit in our car at one point to listen to the radio. And what we got was a radio station that they were trapped in, the radio station. Trees had locked them in. There was no exit for them. They were running on generator. They were the same as us. They had no cell, no electricity, no water, no internet. And they were just actually having people call in and say, if you have a phone that you can reach us, let us know what in your area. So it was really old school, like stuck in a blizzard. That's what it reminded me of.
And that part for me was really actually cool because it tied a connection to, oh my gosh, there's people out there and what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. But there was not a big picture. We didn't even have cellular for about 36 hours maybe. And then we got some spotty texting and some phone ability. But yeah, so other things that we're thinking about, it would be even, I want also multiple methods of cooking. So some kind of little propane thing would be nice. The wood one was great. It's messy because all your pans get like camping.
Black.
Yeah. But we're so grateful for that. I would like multiple methods of water collection. We have one that you could filter in and even creek water. There's the straws. There's all that. They were doing boil for people who had water. They were doing boil recommendations, not recommendations, like definitely boil or bleach. Yeah. I don't love the bleach. I've done it on a river trip before, but I'd like to get some tablets. I just like to have multiple backups. I'd like to have a condensation collector so I could collect some mountain mist.
Oh my gosh. So I was talking to Scott Murray. Y'all know, if you've been listening to my podcast, Scott Murray is one of my mentors and a good friend. And he lives in Vista, California, and he's talking about a condensation collector. First time he'd introduced this to me like 2 weeks ago. And I went out this morning and we're building a chicken coop. And I went out this morning and the boards that you had painted were covered with condensation. And it's, oh, this could really work.
Oh, yeah. Half the time I walk out in the evenings, or you see it in the early mornings, I'm asleep.
Yeah.
Are the misty mountains. We're in the clouds. So it's really quite an ideal place to collect. So, yeah. So thinking of things like that, my mind was also going to, what if this were to last a month? Wait, and some people it has.
Some people it has.
Open without. Yep. And really looking at what's that level of function. Not just like short-term resilience, but what's that level of actually being functional? And yes, our full-time jobs would become potable water, handling the sewage and food.
Yeah.
So looking at that. Oh, and tell them about the toilet you made. I didn't have to use it, but it was a great backup.
Yeah. Our buddy Don Titmus gave a class back during our COVID classes called Humanure. And it reminded me when this whole thing started up that it's really super easy to do a composting toilet. And I got a 5 gallon bucket and I happened to have a piece of pipe wrap. So the insulation for pipe, and I put it around the edge of the bucket as foam and put some toilet paper out there and we had a composting toilet.
And wood chips. Yeah.
And wood chips, which we have by the dozen. So hold on one sec. Anybody that wants to throw questions at us, drop them in the Q&A box, bottom right. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, we always put the Garden Chat out a month after we do it live. You can join us live at gardenchat.org. And we do these monthly and come up with all kinds of great topics. So jump in on that.
I was just going to say, completing the toilet story. That I think that's a great go-to. Everyone should have, and I'm going to get one of the toilet seats that screws on the bucket because that can be a lot more comfortable. That everyone should have that, like a bag of backup wood chips or whatever else you can put over it, shaving, something. So you're not stuck in that situation. We have a permaculture friend here named Gabby, and she teaches classes on what I guess they call dry toilets now.
Dry toilets, exactly.
Nice way to finish it, composting, yeah.
From what I hear, she's been rocking it.
Yeah. So she was going to the Section 8 areas of housing and teaching, doing classes there for people, like hooking people up. So I think just in general, part of a resilience idea is just, yes, the biggies for all of humanity is what to do with waste, what to do with food, and how to gather, garden, have stores, and be able to cook it, and water. Yeah.
And one of the really
and shelter.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I've thought for decades and what I've said since we moved here is part of my big reason for moving here is to see how much of our own food we could grow. And during this downtime, during the 2 weeks where we really didn't have grocery stores, we ate out of our yard. Out of our yard, we ate potatoes, sweet potatoes, lettuce, Swiss chard, help me here, basil,
French sorrel, kale. We have onions we've gathered from there. We had the last of the berries, the raspberries.
Oh, yeah.
And some tomatoes. It was helpful. It was really nice that we were able to share some fresh greens with some neighbors as well, because that, and they did have grocery stores open probably by day three, would you say?
Trader Joe's, when we were there on Friday or Saturday, a week later, they said that they had gotten 3 semi-loads of food on Monday.
Right after the storm.
Storm was Friday night, Saturday. So they had food and were open on Monday, limited hours. They kept the grocery stores open from 9 to 6.
Yeah, because there's still curfew, I believe. And then the Ingles, like gas, there was a shortage there. So the other thing is like having a full tank, having some backup gasoline.
Right.
And living in the mountains, we do pretty much keep a full tank. That's been a thing I've just done. So we were lucky on that.
Right.
Prepared, I should say. We were prepared on that. But yeah, even at the Ingles, it's like our Safeway here. There were lines of people for days outside the door. So that's the other thing. We also were able to take pressure off the system because we had some stores, because we had fresh food. There was no desperation in getting out there. We needed to stay off the road so the linemen and line people could get the electricity back up, could take care of the massive trees and the fallen lines. And so it really is. And I think it was day one when our neighbor was here too. I said, okay, because Kismet had gotten into something. I said, okay, everyone, no one can need medical attention right now. So just mind your P's and Q's, be mindful, be safe. And I talked to our dog. I said, you can't have problems right now. So whatever it is that you've gotten into, let it settle. But that was another thing. Our hospital really had, it was not good.
So Bell says, this is our buddy Bell Star. Bell says, I know you have solar. We're grid tied. Were you able to power your fridge during this time? That's a very interesting story. So apparently what we've discovered is when the grid goes down, our solar panels turn off. And in theory, what we would want to happen or what should have happened was if the sun's out during the day, it's producing electricity for us to be able to get a fridge run during that time. And so we're missing a part. And the company that installed our solar panels, they missed this. And we've been in conversation with them. No, we didn't. And how we ran, and we didn't lose much out of our refrigerator, but how we ran our freezer was a really interesting thing. One of our neighbors, Owen, has a Jackery solar generator. And the Jackery solar generator basically charges from solar panels that hook up to it, or you can run your car and charge the generator with your car. So we have a chest freezer that our buddy David Sosna gave us a few years ago in Phoenix. And we brought it here. And so we put everything we wanted to save in the chest freezer. And interestingly, somebody suggested putting a blanket around the chest freezer when it's not turned on. It has to be turned off, and that further insulates it. And it didn't start to unfreeze. This is a chest freezer, so you open it from the top and not the side. It didn't start to unfreeze until Wednesday. So it didn't have power on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday for 5 days before it actually got to the point where we needed to borrow Owen's Jackery generator and charge it. So we did that on Wednesday and not on, and then on Friday, or maybe it was Tuesday and Thursday or something like that. But that Owen was a gem around that. And one of the things that I did at the Urban Farm over the course of the 20 years that I ran the fruit tree program on the street is everybody on the street got free fruit trees from me. So the 22 houses that were on 13th place between Glendale and Ocotillo. I gave them fruit trees. They had a permission to say, Greg, I want this fruit tree. And we put dozens and dozens of fruit trees on my street. Why? Because what I know is that the stronger our community is, the stronger we're going to be in a mess like this. And we so saw that on our street. One day, Crystal from down the street came and knocked on her door and she said, you want some sandwiches? One of our neighbors, Doug, thank you. Doug had bread and cheese and some cold turkey. Cuts, turkey. And he had made some
turkey melts and tomato soup.
Yes, and right.
Yeah. But in general, I think that's it too. It's like the more we have some preparatory support with ourselves, it's not just about handling what we need ourselves. We have then that to share. And the more, use the word resilient, prepared, having some backup that each person, each family in each house has, the safer a neighborhood is.
Yeah.
Because it's the scarcity that brings out the weird in everybody. Yeah. That was one of the things that I kept thinking about. This is important. And even those who are like, oh, we don't have time for a garden. We don't have time for this. We need to figure out something, time or not, whether it's a tower garden or a community garden here on our property. I don't know, something. But
you said that, a community garden for our neighborhood. And it's, ooh, I got you thinking about that. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Janet Ray says, hi. She wants to know if that's your yoga room.
It is. Hi, Janet Ray. Great to have you here. This is my yoga room. Yeah. My little online space, my little sacred space. So I put up some aspen-looking trees, one of my favorite trees growing up in Arizona, Flagstaff up there. I remember those aspen trees, loved them. And I have some branches on the ceiling, so I feel like I'm in a little treehouse when I'm lying down. Yeah.
Nice. Nice, nice. Eileen says the solar panels need to turn off, so that you are not putting electricity in the grid and hurting the line persons who are trying to get the system back up. That is correct. And there is a system that was supposed to have been installed here that when the grid goes down, it automatically turns off that connection and still should give us electricity. So we're looking into that just to make sure. But even with that said, we've decided we're going to get a dual power generator that takes either propane or gasoline. So we're going to go ahead and do that as a backup to the backup as well. One of the things that happened, so we were without power, water, and internet basically from Friday to Friday. And on Saturday, when the power came back on and the internet came back on, what was that like for you, Heidi?
When the electricity came back on, it felt a bit like a miracle. I think the longest I'd been without electricity before, camping and stuff, but
about 4 hours for me.
Maybe 24, 36 hours before when I lived out in Peoria, maybe, or when I was a kid in Glendale. Yes, it felt like a revelation. And I was really mindful to first get the food back online, right? We had one freezer box left with our stuff and the refrigerator items were on top. And sometimes I'd pull things out here and there that we didn't want freezing and then I'd put them back in. And I was really mindful that, like, you have all this stuff that you're like, suddenly you have electricity and our well is on electricity. So then we had water. So the first thing we really did was clear the pipes. And our wellhead was never under, so it was in good shape. And we filled up more water. It was like your containers, having containers. I filled up a bathtub and just in case. And then I was also trying to share with the neighbors, don't do 20 loads of laundry like in this next hour. We have a grid system. This precarious little grid is upping hundreds and hundreds of more people every day. So my thought was too, like when you're in California with rolling brownouts and blackouts and Arizona and you're trying to chill out on your usage, because I felt like everyone's going to be going crazy with the electricity here. But yeah.
But then from an emotional perspective, it was,
oh,
we both crashed.
It was celebratory. It was like, hallelujah. We went on a walk. We checked in with everyone. And then pretty much everyone that we'd been really super hyper connected to making meals together, we all just, there was this huge drop of the energy of survival. And it just really, and then we all did crash. Yeah. It was exhaustion, yeah, relief, and almost just feeling like someone pulled the plug on you. It was like an exhaustion moment because you're on high alert, and we still feel that. The town is still in that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
There were places that we've eaten that we went to a farmer's market that are no longer there. They were along the French Broad River and they've just been washed away. And I purposely just not gone there. I don't want to go there because it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. We're in Buncombe County, in the area around Asheville, and it's probably 10 or 15 years recovery for some of the places.
And some won't. That's the problem with catastrophe and disaster already, because this is a foodie place. This is an art place. This is a musician's place, this town. And a lot of them are already saying, we need to leave. We need to leave and find work and find shelter. So it's going to be, just from a like sociological perspective, very interesting to just observe and support in any way we can, just what's going to grow out of this and who will stick around and what that may look like. The permaculturists out there are saying, hey, the river found a new path to go. Don't move it back into the bed you think it belongs into. And yet that's already happening in certain small towns. They're like, look, this is where a sidewalk is. And now it ends and the river's flowing there. So let's move the river back where it belongs and put the sidewalk path where it was. I was like, maybe you should just change the sidewalk path to agree with where the river's flowing. But that too is just fascinating, like how we reconstruct. And I know from a city perspective, there's a lot of infrastructure reasons. There's a whole bunch of, there's what's the political will behind putting money toward following a new river path. It's hard to say.
I do want to get to at least a little while about our farm itself.
Sure, let's do it.
And any final thoughts on the hurricane?
Just that we're very fortunate. And I'm sure even those who planned in certain areas lost everything, including life. And there's such a huge amount of grief here. I just don't take that lightly. And to talk about our fortune and how, you know, what the farm is going, I don't want it to seem uncaring or not thoughtful about what we're in the midst of here. And we're going to do our best to, right now, we're just hyper locally supporting those we can. And then we'll figure out what we can do for the greater good in our town as it goes along. But we're just so deeply grateful for everyone on the ground here who is thousands of people who've come in from all over, from FEMA to National Guard to the Cajun
Army.
Is it the Army Cajun?
Yeah,
to the officers for Asheville, the Sheriff's Department, the linemen coming in, 15,000 boots on the ground. And these people are day in, day out risking their lives to try to help people, save people, get people back online. And it's dangerous out there. Seriously.
It is. Yeah.
So whatever you hear in the conspiracy sphere out there, that really what's happening down here is amazing. And we are extremely grateful. And I think most people that we have run into, that we've heard from, that we hear about, are working together. And it's peaceful and it's good. So if there's a good thing to come out of that, that's it.
Yeah.
And yeah, just wanting to at least set that out there, that none of this is light fare for us.
I did see a couple of, a couple of way negative videos. And my thought was, first of all, I didn't experience anything like that. Everybody was positive and happy, as happy as you could be with the situation, and forward moving. Don't believe all you hear out there. So one of the things I wanted to touch on was the elderberries, because I planted 90 elderberries and about another 50 other fruit trees and berry bushes. And I just wanted to touch on those. The elderberries are doing great. They went from January of 2023 being 8-inch sticks to some of them are easily 10 feet tall and they're starting to go to sleep. They are deciduous. I took most of the flowers off this year. I had a couple of purveyors of elderberry things that came by and harvested flowers, but we ended up with 1 half-gallon jar of berries off of our elderberries this year. And next year, so year number one, which was last year, was about developing the roots. This year was about developing this tree structure, the plant structures. And next year will be about the fruit. Brenda wants to know what varieties of elderberry. Bob Gordon, Adams, and Wildwood are the three that I had planted out. And it was interesting to see how the Adams, some of them were in full sun, and they are twice the size of the ones that were in half-day shade, interestingly. The Bob Gordons didn't, none of them grew as hardily as the Adams or the Wildwoods. And the Wildwoods grew the most vigorously. The Wildwoods are easily, most of them are 10 feet tall. And so one of the things that I'm going to be doing this next year, come January, is I'll be pruning them back and starting the different varieties as plant starts, because I'm going to start selling elderberry plant starts here locally.
Yeah. You said that you had only 1.5 gallons. You had a ton of berries. You just cut them.
Yeah. What they ended up in a 1/2-gallon jar.
That you gathered, that you allowed to go.
Yes.
You also had friends come and trim a ton of flowers.
Yes.
So they're drying them and making teas and other
exactly.
things. So they
exactly.
were prolific. You just purposely sent it back to the shoots.
Exactly. Yeah. The shoots and the roots. Exactly.
Yeah.
And we had an interesting thing happen with one of our trees on our property. We only lost one tree in the storm. It was about a 25-foot tall.
15-year-old willow.
And the trunk on it is 1 foot in diameter. And it got pushed over. And so I had to cut it up. And I've got a pile now that's hopefully breaking down. But I took a 10-inch long sticks and I put them in a jar of water. Every single one of them within a week had gotten roots. And I'd heard that willows root vigorously. So after I saw that happen, I went out and cut another off of the wood that was out there. So now it had been 3 weeks since the tree fell down. I went and took another 50 cuttings. So we'll have, if they all bud out, we'll have 60 willows that I'll have to pot up and figure out what to do with. But they very vigorously rooted out. It was pretty cool.
The tree carries on.
And then I want you to talk about your berries. You've done a really good job of the blueberries. They're struggling. We haven't figured out how to do blueberries yet or get them started. But you have some raspberries. Which ones were the ones that did really well?
Yeah, it's a ruby red, I believe is the name of it, raspberry. We got 2 at the WNC plant sale 2 years ago.
Yep.
And the first year it gave us berries. And then this year, pretty much every other day I'd go out there and then I'd have a lot of really that nice dark red raspberry. Then it's ready. When it's just pink red, it's not quite ready. And yeah, so we had a nice, it wasn't like abundant enough. I was hoping to have like little crates to hand out to neighbors. But we had some that we were able to enjoy pretty much daily through from July to it's finishing out now. Yeah. And they're good size and beautiful flavor. The smell, the taste, it's like, you get the whole thing and you really taste like what a raspberry, what you'd imagine it should taste.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So that's been good. And the blueberries, it just looks like they're getting a little fried. And I've heard that they like a dappled shade until they get established. They're not getting that on our hill. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see if they can rally. We've put some pine needles down at the base that's supposed to help resist the fungus that attacks the blueberries here. Yeah, we'll see. And we have some that you planted this year close to the house next to the little Hobbit greenhouse.
Yep.
And they seem to be doing pretty good.
Yeah.
No, but they get some shade. They're not getting as much. They get a little bit of shade after it passes the house there, and they don't get as much direct because of the little greenhouse. So
Right. That'll
be interesting to see if they do well.
And that being said, once they get established, they rock. Brenda says the willows will also act as a rooting hormone. Yes, I have heard that before, that if you take some willow cuttings and stick them in a jar of water with something you want to root, it activates the roots for them.
Now, I'll have to try that with some of my houseplant cuttings.
Exactly. Oh, and another thing, I was able to air layer some grapes this year. And basically what that means is you take it's a little plastic container and wrap it around with some soil in it, wrap it around a couple of nodes on the grapes. And those nodes on the grapes, a node is anywhere on the grapevine that there's a bump that leaves come out of, and they readily rooted. And then I cut them off of the main plant and stuck them in a pot, and they're like happy. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you're growing grapes from our grapes. And our grapes started out this season. They were planted end of last summer.
Yep.
And they started out this season about 2 feet high. And they made
that.
It all the way over this large canopy pergola. And so there's two different kinds on that. And again, we cut most of the fruit off so we could send it into these long shoots. So it'll be interesting to see how much survives through the winter and the freezes. But
yeah.
It's prolific. It was pretty cool. And even in our regular garden beds, it's been fun this season to see like the food forest effect happening within a regulated garden bed. So we have cilantro and other little baby lettuces. Hey, it's time. The weather's cooling off. And it's just popping up even after you added like 6 inches, because he raised the bed and added a whole bunch more soil. And the sorrel, I've done French sorrel before in Arizona. But I've never had a bunch. Now it's two plants that are 3 feet by a foot and a half wide. And they went to seed. I gathered a ton of seed off of them. Then the shoots that went up to seed fell over, broke off eventually. Greg removed them. And the plant just kept producing amazing fresh new sorrel. So I just hadn't experienced that before. That was cool. So we still have those two plants fully producing new baby shoots. They're delicious. I use them in salads. I stir fry. I put them on sandwiches. Yeah.
Yeah. And they seem to go perennial.
This one's lasted since last winter, and we're overwintering this one again. And then I have little babies that I've created seeds from around it. Yeah. But yeah, sweet potatoes, you had great success with potatoes. You probably talked about that already in a previous chat.
And one of the things that we're doing with the sweet potatoes is I bought sweet potato slips. And I didn't know this because I've always grown sweet potatoes from a sweet potato at the grocery store. But I bought some sweet potato slips this year. And a sweet potato slip is simply a branch of a sweet potato that was 6 or 8 inches long with roots on it. That's it. So we've had a couple of freezing nights here, so it knocked them way back. But before that happened, I went out and cut 8 or 10 sweet potato branches and stuck them in water. And I'm thinking that they're going to root here pretty soon so that I'll have them for next season.
Yeah. And we have our spinach coming up, our arugula, this giant winter spinach, it's called, that we originally, I believe we got the seeds. I got them at So True Seeds.
Yep.
And which is right in downtown Asheville. And I, like, we've tried to do spinach so many times.
In Phoenix. Yes. We tried it so many times in Phoenix.
So many times. I had one good batch 1 year from an inside tower garden. But these are amazing. And we don't even have to leaf them. I do put frost cloth over with the big metal, what's the word? I don't know. They're actually used in construction, but we're using them as garden trellis.
Hoop houses.
And it just rocks. It makes it all the way through winter. You get in there, you pull out a hole, however you want to work with spinach. And they're big peas. They're like good sized leaves.
They were good sized leaves. Yeah. And that was the interesting thing about it. We planted it in the fall last year and it produced a little bit in the winter, and it rocked as soon as it warmed up a little bit, we were harvesting off of those spinach plants every single day. It was so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So lots of greens right now. Next year, we should hopefully have service berries and mulberries. We do have a mulberry, an old mulberry down in the front yard. But you chose ones like the Illinois Everberry.
Yep.
We have a Pakistani because we love it so much, but it's struggling. This isn't hot enough for me here. This is the thing. I think the trade-off for you, Greg, has been it won't be citrus here, but it'll be berries. Lots of berries.
Very good.
Very good, yeah. There'll be a ton of those, from the raspberries to the blueberries to...
Talking about citrus, we brought 3 citrus trees with us when we came here. We brought a Trovita orange, a Caracara navel, and a Mineola tangelo. And I've got them in about a 15-gallon size pot. And we have a little greenhouse that they go into when it gets super cold outside. And all 3 of them have fruit on them this year. Last year, we got a couple of Mineola tangelos, but all 3 of them have some fruit on them this year. So I'm excited about that. Not nearly what we get in Phoenix, but.
And not what you would recommend keeping it in a pot.
Not what, especially in the desert.
You're like, highlight the lead. No one heard that. But that's where they need to live. Yeah.
Any final thoughts, love?
I'm excited about our chicken house. Next step, we're going to be screening and hardware clothing that in. And
hopefully getting chickens
building
by
a chicken run.
February. Yeah.
Building a chicken run in spring after the last freeze. And I'm excited to have chickens again. It'll be 3 years. Yeah. That's a long time without my chicken babies. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, that thought. The last time I didn't have chickens was 1999. I had chickens at the Urban Farm from 1999 to 2022 when we left. So we had eggs during that entire time. So I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be good. And they're my pet chickens. So that'll be fun too. Good therapy. Yeah. The gardening, I think we're learning more each year as we go. And I just planted some seeds for pak choi and some more greens. And there's a fun lettuce that our friend in Hot Springs here, actually Sina, you all know her too. She was
the Worm Whisperer.
Worm Whisperer, yeah. She gave us, it was called Drunken Woman Lettuce. So I planted that again. And we have some neighbors that have honeybees, and our buddy down the way gave us a nice big thing of honey. And summer's over, so I'll miss my frogs and toads, but I'm also excited that it's happy time for greens and having the wood stove going and all of that. It's just very interesting having forests. It's a new world for us.
Right. Yeah, exactly. After you lived in Phoenix for 51 years, I lived in Phoenix for 54 years. So
my whole life.
Seasons is that. Yeah. Dallin. Hey, Dallin. Dallin is our Mesa pickup guy for stuff in the nursery in the Phoenix metropolitan area. Thanks for being here, Dallin. He wants to know how our swales did with all the rain. We actually, in a 5-day period, got 16 inches of rain. One day, we got 6 inches, and the swales handled it just fine.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of swales, and swales are on contour ditches that are designed on a slope coming down a hill that are designed to slow the water down and spread it across the contour line. And they did great.
Yeah, we were real lucky. The water management did pretty well. Oh, the other thing we really need to get on is the totes, the gathering this lovely rainwater.
Yes.
Like we would have been set. We would have had for a fine length of time if we had a couple of those 300-gallon ones filled. So we have a to-do list.
Yes, we do have a to-do list.
A to-do list, yes.
So, excellent. We got a couple of things I want to address after you tell us about what you do. Tell us about what you offer people and...
Okay. You got the beginning of it. This is my studio, 2 doors down from his studio in our house. And I teach online yoga 5 days a week, and I do different types of classes. And it's I would say it's the base of who I am is yoga for 25 years. And I explore and teach things like functional movement and somatic movement, yoga nidra, and really this whole notion of coming to a physical practice with compassion being the base of how you approach it, self-compassion, and then being able to offer that out to others, and moving well. So I would say the crew that I tend to work with are 50 and above. And
us agers.
Probably my main crew is between 60 and 80 right now. But strong, healthy, mobile folks that are continuing to stay strong and move well. And so I have everything from lying down, roll around on the floor, relax classes to therapeutic classes to gentle to a strong one that you do with me, Greg, hop around. So we do dynamic movement. Some of it might look like dance and aerobics, and then we mix it in with then go into a yoga flow. So it's great fun. I still love it after this quarter of a century. And then I've created a website at yogawithheidi.org, and it houses over 180 of my classes right now. And they're all categorized. So you can look at, oh, I need some low back help, or I need some strength, or I want a chair class, or all of that. That's a big project I've been working on for the last year and a half. And then I also send out recordings. So every class I do, I record. And if people want fresh recordings, and if you're not on Arizona time zone and those times don't work for you, then I am available to send recordings, or you can use the website. And then if you want even a one-on-one, I don't do a ton of them, but I'm open to that, of meeting with folks and seeing what their needs are and seeing if I can help. So really, it's about bringing more joy and self-agency into how you move in life. And the classes assist in that, and also hopefully take you on a nice little journey from an hour to an hour and a half, and just feel better in this deluge of stress that we're all living in. So we have some more skills to be kind and be useful and be of service and sleep well and all the things that we need to carry on.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Thank you. And Janet Ray said, post a link. I put it there, yogawithheidi.org.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You can
awesome.
Put my email up too, if you want. You can connect with me through that website, or you can email directly to my personal email. So,
and that is?
The hlyogini@yahoo.com. Yeah.
Excellent. Mary Lynn said, just got home from work. Can we watch the recording? You can't watch the recording, but you can listen to the recording. We put the recordings out on the Urban Farm podcast next month. So the following month after we do our chat, we put out the recordings. So you can listen in about 30 days, Mary Lynn. I'll have it posted on our podcast, urbanfarmpodcast.com. Thank you, everybody. It's been great. And we will catch you next month. We appreciate everything you do out there.
Thanks for being here. It's a pleasure.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org, or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.